World-renowned writer Isabel Allende has authored 23 books. 23. That work ethic, it's one of many things her grandpa drilled into her.
Don't complain. Don't expect any help. Serve. Be responsible. Be honest. Don't whine. No time to look at yourself in the mirror. No time to be looking at your navel. No introspection. Just be out there in the world and work. That was the lesson. And it served me well. But now I'm 75 years old and I want to relax and have some fun, for God's sake.
If you're a fan of Allende's writing, you'll be glad to know fun does not mean she has stopped writing. She's in Seattle today to talk about her latest novel. Even though Seattle has let her down before, she still remembers coming back to Seattle specifically to buy a dress she had seen here in a window downtown.
It was a Lulu Lang dress that looked like a butterfly. And I came back to Seattle, took a plane, and came back to try the dress. I looked terrible. I looked like an extra in the Cirque du Soleil.
So the dress was a work of art, but maybe not a garment for you at this time.
Few garments are for me. I can only buy off the rack a Snoopy pajama, probably. The rest needs to be adjusted.
I see. Well, I'm so glad you're here doing a public radio interview. However, you, I understand that romantic and strange things can happen when you do public radio interviews.
I know.
Yeah. Would you tell that story?
Well, I had... First of all, let me refer a little bit to the book.
Yes.
That is called In the Midst of Winter. And it refers to those emotional winters that we all go through in our lives sooner or later. And at the time when I started writing this book, I had been going through one of those long emotional winters because I had divorced my husband after 28 years of marriage. And I had loved that man very much. My beloved agent, Carmen Balcells, died suddenly. Three of my best friends died, and my dog Olivia died. So it was a time of sorrow somehow. And then I started writing this book, and as it usually happens, the book pulled me out of whatever depressive mood I was in because I was so interested in the story. And I started the book on January 8th.
As always.
As always, last year. And then around May, I got an email in my office from a guy who had heard me on NPR, a widower from New York who was driving to Boston, and he pulled over because he heard me on the radio. And he didn't like what I said. I have no idea what I said. And so he emailed the office. And we started corresponding. I would answer sometimes, but he emailed me every morning and every evening for 5 months. I mean, the patience of this guy and how stubborn he is. Uh-huh. And so eventually we met in New York in October because I had to go to a gala of the Center for Reproductive Rights. And so I invited him to the gala. We met there among many, many other people. And the next day we went out for lunch. And in the main course was ravioli. And I thought, what am I doing here? So I said, look, what are your intentions? Because I'm 75 years old, I have no time to waste. If somebody says that to me, I would have run away. Mm-hmm. But he choked on the ravioli, that's true. But he survived. And now he's moving to my house in a few weeks. He sold his house, he got rid of everything he owns, and he's coming with a bike and his clothes to live with me in a very small cottage where I live.
And it all started from him emailing you to tell you something he didn't like that you had said.
In NPR, yes.
Wow. Miracles occur. Well, who knows what will happen after this public radio interview. Talking about your novel, Isabel, you once said that you don't know what your book is about until you read the reviews.
Yeah.
And I took that as a joke, but then I wasn't so sure. Half joking?
Half joking, because I think I'm writing about something, and then in the review, or because somebody gives me an insight or a feedback, I realize that the book taps into something that was important for me all my life, and I hadn't sort of put it in words. And then when I, let me give you an example. When I wrote Island Beneath the Sea, that's a book about the slave revolt in Haiti 200 years ago. Culturally, it has nothing to do with me. We never had plantations in Chile. We never had African slaves. Why would I spend 4 years of my life researching this very difficult book? and I was obsessed with it until I wrote it, never knowing why, until when the book was done, I realized that the theme of the book is absolute power with impunity, which is the power of the master over the slave. That's the worst example of it. But we have power with impunity everywhere. We are seeing it today in politics everywhere. And that has been an obsession even before the military coup for me. Because I grew up in the 40s in a patriarchal, conservative, authoritarian family where authority was never questioned. And it had impunity. It was not accountable.
In your own family.
And in the society where I lived.
Mm-hmm. Well, has that happened with this book, In the Midst of Winter? Have you learned anything about what your book is about?
Yeah, I remembered what I knew. I have been in other winters in my life, and some of them have been much deeper and longer than this one, the latest one. For example, the winter of my daughter's demise.
Paola.
And I had forgotten that there is always an invincible summer waiting to manifest itself if we give it a chance. No winter lasts forever. And so often nowadays when people seem so depressed because of politics and how divisive the country is and how gloomy everything looks, I always remind people there is an invincible summer. The summer is waiting under the surface. These are bad times, but they will not be forever. We went through 17 years of dictatorship in Chile where everything was controlled and repressed. There were no political parties allowed. And still, we got democracy back in a democratic process. So I believe that I'm optimistic without being Pollyanna. I really know that we evolve. Things get better. They don't get worse.
And Chile figures into this novel. For those of our listeners who don't know, would you remind them that your first cousin, once removed, was the president, the democratically elected president of Chile, who was deposed in part by the CIA? Would you mind telling us again what you remember about that day and those events?
Well, Salvador Allende had represented a coalition of parties of the left and the center called the Unidad Popular. And he was elected in 1970. Immediately, the conservative forces in Chile, and with the help of the CIA, tried to block whatever he tried to do in his government. For 3 years, we had a very, very bad political, economic, and social crisis. In March of 1973, we had parliamentary elections, and the Unidad Popular increased its votes in spite of the crisis. So then the CIA and the military, the CIA and the right-wing parties decided that they had to, sabotaging the government would not end the government. They needed something drastic. And so they provoked a military coup with the idea that the military will depose Allende and then call elections. That didn't happen. Allende died during the coup, and a brutal dictatorship began with horrible repression and atrocities that were committed by the military.
The Pinochet.
The Pinochet regime that lasted 17 years. And many Chileans left the country. I was among them with my family. And others were arrested and disappeared, and their bodies were never found. Others were tortured. Many were executed without trial. There was no habeas corpus. You could be arrested and you couldn't even ask what had happened to the person. So in this book, I have three characters only, three of them traumatized, three of them living in a winter of their lives. One of them is Lucia Maraz, who is a journalist and a writer. She looks like me, but it's not me. It's a friend of mine.
And she looks like you?
In the sense that her life resembles mine, but that's because many lives of that time in Chile resemble mine. I was no exception. And so her brother disappears. She has to go into exile. She lives abroad, comes back, researches about the human rights abuses of the dictatorship, and writes two books. The second character is Richard Baumeister, who is a professor at NYU, and he teaches Latin American studies. And so he has invited Lucia to teach for a semester or two semesters. And the third character, and he also has been traumatized in his past, and we don't know until the end of the book what happened to him. And then the third character is a young woman from Guatemala, undocumented immigrant, who lives and works, almost slave work, in a household where she's the maid and she takes care of a kid. An event brings these three people together in the midst of a blizzard. So it's a real winter also. It's the winter of New York, January last year, and which I was there, so I really loved it when it happened.
And it was super warm, and then it turned.
And then it turned to this blizzard, epic storm that paralyzed the state, really. So that was the glue I needed to put together all these characters and this event. And so that's what the book is about. And each one of them, of course, I didn't have to research for Lucia, because I know the story very well, the story of Chile. But I did research a lot for Evelyn Ortega, the Guatemalan girl. Not only I had been in Guatemala, but I have a foundation that works with refugees and immigrants. So I have cases like the case of Evelyn Ortega. I didn't have to make it up. But I did have to research the gangs in Guatemala, the political corruption and all that.
Evelyn, among other things, has fled sexual violence. Why do you, and you said you've known many women like Evelyn,
yeah.
And I don't know everything that you mean by that, but I wonder why do you think it is that sexual violence isn't something we talk more about when we talk about immigration, because it's an aspect that you seem to care a lot about.
Yeah, but because it's just part of the violence. It's almost taken for granted. In the case of Evelyn, her family, her two brothers are assassinated by the gang, by the MS-13, the worst gang in Central America and Mexico.
Which started in the USA.
Yeah, in LA. Mm-hmm. And it was exported back to Central America and Mexico. And it has 80,000 members, recognized members, and it's the most brutal organization, one of the most brutal in the world. And so they assassinate the brothers and they take revenge on the family. And so she's beaten up and raped as part of the process. It's not unusual that she would be raped. The only unusual thing is that she survives. And then she has to get out because she's a witness to what has happened. She needs to get out. And this is a young woman with no resources, with no family. Her mother has been sending money from the north, from the United States, for years. She doesn't even know her mother. So she travels to the United States. Now, all the traveling, the trip, the journey from Central America to the United States across Mexico is an ordeal, especially for women, because the smugglers are criminals, most of them. And they end up not only raping them, but sometimes abandoning them or selling them into prostitution, selling them to the gangs. So for women, it's really hard. And I've seen this. So to have Evelyn being the victim of sexual violence is not at all unusual. The unusual thing would have been if it didn't happen to her.
Yeah. And yet, that's why I asked about it. Yet it's not something that gets talked about so much, even though we talk about immigration constantly.
And we don't talk about domestic violence. Women who come here seeking asylum because they're running away from domestic violence. One of the cases that my foundation saw, the husband and his brother who systematically raped this woman broke both her legs with a baseball bat. And this woman practically crawled through the border to the United States looking for asylum. But domestic violence is not considered, usually not considered, like a reason to grant asylum. No, the situation is really hard.
Do you? This is fiction. And by the way, my guest is Isabel Allende. The novel is In the Midst of Winter, and it's a fiction. And we're talking about politics. Is that what you want to happen in your reader?
No, I want to tell a story that matters to me. I want to have characters that speak for me. I couldn't possibly write a book about Wall Street, but I can write about this because I care for this and I know it. But this is not a book about politics only. There are politics. Immigration is a big theme in the book, but it's also a love story between two people who are in their 60s. So it's mature love, which I care for at this time in my life. And it's about relationships. It's about loyalty, solidarity, and how we are or we are not willing to take risks to help another person. And when we do, things happen. In the case of Richard, the male character in this trio, is a man who is so guarded that nothing can happen in his life. He's insured against everything except his memories, because he cannot be insured against his nightmares. But he's insured against everything else. He has a little life. He doesn't want anything to upset that life. He's vegan. He has four cats. Well, he's based on my brother, actually.
Oh.
And that's my brother, a person who has such a perfect life that nothing can happen. But then it does happen. Sometimes it does. And then...
Has your brother read this book?
Yeah. Of course, he doesn't recognize himself in the book.
He doesn't.
And when something happens in his life that tests him, we see the character. We see what kind of person he really is. And then he opens up. And by taking risks that he would have never thought he could take, everything happens in his life. Good things.
Do you mind yet one more person telling you what happened in their mind as they were reading the book?
Of course, tell me.
Well, the two main characters, Richard and Lucia, reminded me of this country, because we're not a young country anymore. It feels that way, especially now. And there's this white man and a Chilean immigrant. They can't seem to connect. And an undocumented immigrant sort of brings things to a boil. And in the end, it's a hopeful story.
It's a story of redemption, yes.
Starts with a pot brownie and ends up with love. But man, there's hell in between. But I wondered whether you wanted us to be thinking about 2017 politics when we're reading this.
No, because the country was not as divided and polarized. There was not so much hatred in the air as now when I wrote the book. Only a year ago, in January of last year, when I started the book, Trump wasn't even a candidate. He became a candidate around May. And by the time I finished the book, he wasn't president even. So, but the issue of immigration and many other issues that are in the book were in the air. Trump didn't invent them. He just harvested the worst and created this movement that has divided the country so badly. In the book at the end, there's what I love, and I have this in many of my books, poetic justice. A sort of redemption that comes from sometimes bypassing law, the judiciary system, bypassing what is legal, and just focusing on what is human, what comes from the heart, what really has to be done to help someone. And sometimes it's illegal. So be it.
That seems to be a theme with you sometimes. You wrote about Zorro,
yeah.
Right? Doesn't Zorro redeem outside the law?
Yeah. I don't trust the system most of the time. Remember that I lived through the dictatorship. In 24 hours, the legal system was demolished. And people had no rights of any kind. Anything could happen and no one would be punished for that. So I have seen how easily it can collapse. How easily we can violate the law. I recently was at the African American Museum in Washington, and there's a whole section about lynching. And I was so horrified at how that was almost legal. Almost legal. People were sending postcards to their friends with images of lynching. And more than 4,000 people were lynched in this country. And this was, did the law intervene? It didn't. So I don't trust the law much. But I trust the human heart. I think that if we have a chance to hear another person's story, to see another, look at another person in the eye, no matter what the color, from where they come, what language they speak, what faith they have, we can connect.
That is optimist, writer, philanthropist Isabel Allende, and her new book is called In the Midst of Winter.